Buongiorno everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Idea Element, part of a Geneva Beta 2 week special. Today we have been lucky enough to get an hold of the office of Chuck Reeves, who is the principal development lead for the Geneva framework. Hi Chuck, how's it going?
Hi everybody.
Thank you for having us. So, as it's our custom, let me start by asking you, what is your story with Microsoft, and what was the path that led you to today?
I've been with Microsoft for about 13 years. I started out as a developer consultant, the only developer actually working for Microsoft in the state of Kansas. I did that for about a year, working on various enterprise solutions, and eventually signed on with a group up here on the Microsoft campus. Where I focused again on industry vertical solutions, specifically healthcare, for a while. Eventually moved into the product groups where I've built a number of things, including Unity UI services. I was the development lead for Windows Card Space and am now in lead position for the Geneva framework.
Fantastic. That's a very, very impressive background. So I'm sure that you are exactly the right person for the kind of questions that I have in store for you today. We already met with Harvey, and we had an overview of the Geneva framework, which was really, really interesting. And also, we spent some time with Sasha, understanding the delta between Beta 1 and Beta 2, and all the features for the application developer. You guys made a fantastic job in making the separation of concern, so that the application developer doesn't really have to worry much about things like credentials or protocols and similar. However, we do have in our viewers somebody that likes to play or have to work with these kind of things. So I would really, really like to hear from you what makes the Geneva framework thick. So a bit of internal structure or how we actually process the information, how the magic behind the scenes work.
Okay. I don't know if I'd consider it magic, but there's certainly a lot of inner workings that we've put together to create a canvas on which people can implement security solutions for their applications, and I'd be happy to walk you through that. The place that we primarily start out today is, you know, in our way of thinking in terms of how we approach these problems, has been that enterprises specifically really don't have a common scheme for defining authentication and authorization infrastructure. There really isn't a single approach that they can take to securing the protected resources that they have in their application, which identity is certainly job one in doing. So it's been our effort, at least for a few of the application environments that we're working with, specifically ASP.NET and WCF are our initial targets, to come up with a common medium for describing users. And in this specific problem domain, we are focusing on federated applications. So as opposed to scenarios that are typically inside the firewall where there's a single domain controller in place, we think that, you know, the model for that Microsoft puts forward is largely defined and you know, relatively effective. But once you move the user or the resource itself into distinct security domains, the problem gets significantly more complicated, and the solutions that are available to us today are not where we think we can put them. And we think Geneva has a real role to play in simplifying that model. So basically, you can think of us, basically anything that happens inside the firewall, we think about how you can do it across domains. And so we're trying to make all that true, starting with those two specific development environments and working with a number of our partners that I think typify those, such as SharePoint, et cetera. So I guess the first place to start with is what that model looks like once that we're trying to create. What's the abstraction of an identity or a security principle once they get into an application? The way that we first start is with the characteristics of a security principle. Today, within a single domain, there is generally considered to be a single issuer. Typically, when you talk about SIDs within an NT token, there you really don't care about who the authority is because there's only one domain and one issuer. Therefore, there's no need to really express that information in policy, usually. So when you go into the ACL editor, for example, and say that you want to grant access to administrators or to users, typically, you know, there's not a lot of variation in the issuer of that credential. However, when you step into a federated model, the issuer becomes a very significant concern. And so we take what you might consider attributes, and I consider SIDs to generally be in that class, and there are subtle differences. It is capable of doing a little more than that, but generally those we think of those as attributes. And we have to move to a different model that we call a claim, which includes not only a name-value pair, for example, but also the person that's making that assertion. And in our model, a reference to the other claims associated with the subject themselves, so that we have kind of a circular reference there. But building on that claim, we take a collection of those, and we think of those as being the way that we describe or name a security principle. So the first effort that we have is to associate any executing thread, for the most part, or action, activity that's being executed within an application to be associated with a security principle or subject that's making the request. And so one of the places that we've started is that we went to the security principle infrastructure that's in the .NET framework, and we've extended the iIdentity interface to carry an additional collection of claims. And this claims is, we call that interface iClaimsIdentity. And then if you move to a model where you're going to have potentially multiple tokens or multi-party security principles, we develop a concept from that extends on iPrinciple. So we have an iClaims principle that carries multiple iClaims identities, so that you could have, in a situation where there is multiple tokens that are endorsing a request to represent the security principle, we will generate an iClaims identity for each one of those, and each one of those will be attached to an iClaims principle, and we put that on the thread.current principle. So just like you carry a Windows identity on typically all Windows authenticated requests or calls in an application, we attach a Windows claims principle, or potentially just a simple claims principle, to represent those security principles within the application. So that describes fundamentally what our authentication process is designed to do. We're trying to take each individual application environment and manipulate or integrate with the authentication infrastructure that it carries today, such that we generate this even common surface for describing the security principles that are going to be interacting with the application. We've done that, as I said, in two environments today. The first one is ASP.NET. We largely start with the forms-based authentication model is typically what you see used in that environment today. Not surprisingly, we've integrated a number of federation protocols, specifically WS Federation Passive and SAMLP at least inside the server infrastructure today. And we've developed ASP.NET HTTP modules that parallel some of the behavior that you see in forms and URL authorization, and in some ways complement those so that you can actually mix and match them to accomplish or wield this these protocols to generate the information in forms of tokens attached to requests that we can use to generate the security principles that I mentioned earlier, and then write out cookies that serialize that information for subsequent visits after the authentication step. In the WCF environment, we've had the environment is a little bit more complex in terms of the number of moving parts, but we've largely taken advantage of the ability of WCF to generate a custom principle. There's a facility in there in terms of the security mode that allows external code to generate a principle that WCF will use in the operation context that we produce. And the way that we do that is that we've written our own security authorization manager, and what it does is allows us to plug in our own security authenticators. And those authenticators interact with a common set of what we call security token handlers that support serializing tokens, reading, writing, and validating those, which is the last step in the token processing pipeline that produces this claims principle that I've earlier mentioned. And by specifying that as the custom principle that we desire WCF to use, that is available to WCF applications to evaluate during the authorization process. So that's kind of where we start in terms of kind of establishing that flat canvas, you know, across those different environments. We're looking at you know, certainly others down the road that we're going to be attempting to do the same thing, including partial trust, obviously, Silverlight potentially, and potentially REST and POX environments as well. Beyond that authentication layer, once we establish that, we have introduced a couple of models for how we think that people would do authorization on top of it, because that's really the end goal here, is to enable people, application developers and system architects, to design infrastructure that can, a common infrastructure, if you will, that for purposes of authorization. By giving them this consistent, even canvas, we believe that they're going to be able to have a better chance, at least, of centralizing those policies and analyzing them in a way that gives them better control over their enterprise infrastructure and understanding of how it works in this new federated model that all of us seem to face.
Fantastic. That was really, really an excellent overview. Thank you for that. Now, since I'm a bit thick and I don't have the same abstraction capabilities that apparently you have, I would ask you if we could move a tad toward the implementation and just show, for example, one actual scenario. Let's say that we have an ASP.NET application, and we'd like to see what happens before this application, so that when the application has available the principle that you described. So just maybe take a look at which HTTP modules would be in front of the app, their names, and what would be their job.
Okay, so after we introduce our infrastructure, right?
Right.
Now, well, let's move to the whiteboard a little bit. So essentially today, what you would see, what you would start with in an ASP.NET app is that typically there would be a module pipeline. Let's kind of put that up here.
Do you have a black marker? Because unfortunately the blue one is not very clear on camera.
Sure. So let's say we've got this module pipeline. Typically what you would see is that there would be a forms authentication module that would sit in front of this thing to be able to do passive redirects. It would be followed up usually by something, either this or something analogous to the URL authorization module. Okay. And the idea being that any protected content would be front-ended by this pipeline, and when a request comes in, they would be redirected by the forms auth module to some login infrastructure, okay, that would accept credentials from the user, generate a token, and then generate a redirect back to this infrastructure with the token attached. And then the forms auth module would process that and generate some sort of I principle. Okay. And the URL authorization module, based on configuration, would permit or deny access to the different content that sat behind the pipeline based on the group memberships, typically, that the principal had. So what we've done today is that we've replaced, or as I said, come up with something that's roughly analogous to this, where at least we'll take WS Federation as an example. We have, not surprisingly by name, a WS Federation off module that we call the FAM, okay? And then we have an additional element in here that we add, that we split up forms off to use, that's called the session authentication module. So we've given people the ability to replace the cookie authentication infrastructure that comes through this that is previously actually factored into forms in ASP.NET. So that part sits here. And then there is a claims authorization module that sits downstream of that that is optionally can be used as well. But the relationship is roughly the same, where either that when a request comes into the pipeline, the federated authentication module will redirect unauthenticated users to login infrastructure based on the WS Federation protocol. This login infrastructure can involve a sequence of STSs and WS Trust, passive exchanges using redirects in the browser to, again, generate a piece of script that includes a token in it that'll be written back to the client, which, when it's executed, will post a request to the auth module that has the token attached, okay? And this token will be processed by the FAM and will be used to generate, in our case, an I claims principle. We abbreviate that with ICP in our case. And it'll then flow through the authorization infrastructure to allow access to the protected content. As part of that authorization step, should it be configured in such a way, a cookie will be written that serializes this claims principle back into the browser, such that on subsequent visits this authentication step is not necessary and we can just execute the authorization portions of the pipeline. The session auth module is capable of authenticating that format of cookie, and we think of it as just another token handler in our infrastructure in that way, thus the common suffix between the two. That's largely, I think, the model in terms of how we expect that most people that are using blanket protection and authentication modules in ASP.NET will accomplish a lot of this. There are models that involve controls and on-page processing that are possible, but we think that the blanket protection model presented by these modules is the primary way that sort of thing is going to happen.
That's great.
Okay.
And just to remind the user, all these things are nicely waved into your ASP.NET application using the templates and the Visual Studio integration that we discussed with Sesha in the other video. So this is nice because we finally understand what's behind the scenes, but you shouldn't worry about having to think about these all the time. What Chuck just described, actually, how to say, the system largely takes care of that. You don't worry about these unless you want to change something.
Yeah, correct. I think the tools and the developer tool integration stuff that we've done specifically with the Federation utility, and I think the templates gives you a way to wield some of this stuff that is at least a way to get you started and to model your app at the beginning. As you're going to tune it and refine it before deployment and for some of your later milestones, we think that you may need to understand a little bit more detail, but certainly everybody needs help with configuration management, and we've tried to provide some of that. We're no exception.
That's great. Thank you. So now you probably hate me because you are sitting back, but I'll ask you to go back to the whiteboard, because this stuff was so nice and fascinating that I'm wondering if you would be so kind to do the same for WCF. Let's say you have a WCF system. What would you do today, and instead how the Geneva framework help you to do things better?
Yeah, sure. So the model in WCF is significantly different, obviously, in terms of we don't use this pipeline infrastructure. But typically in WCF, you've basically got a class that you've defined as let's think of it as a service, and I'll use some horrible abbreviated syntax for kind of characterizing how this works. And then you go into each of your classes and the methods that you have, you will expose as web methods. Okay? And then roughly, once you get the service defined, you will compose or wrap that class, say that it's our service one, in some sort of service host. Okay? And, you know, hand in service one, basically. And that creates all of the wiring, if you will, once you associate all the different bindings and everything with it to route or serialize all the infrastructure off the wire into the programming model that everybody is familiar with. So our goal, again, here is that when you get into the method, that you have an iClaims principle, okay, that is available to you, that you can use to evaluate and do authorization checks or potentially to refer to different properties of the user as part of the logical execution of your program. So what we've done is that we've come up with infrastructure that that allows us to, I guess you'd say, augment the service host, and we've got a call called configure service host that's in our library, which takes, you know, the service host itself and basically takes the configured authentication process that you want to apply, the template that you've described, that being the token handlers, the audience URIs, the way that you think of issuers that you trust, that you want to grant access into your application. It basically defines how we serialize the security header that's associated with each of the message requests that come into each of your methods, and how we process those to generate a claims principle. It's roughly pretty simple. Again, all that you have to do is to typically call configure service host, and we'll draw typically from configuration files, and there's a service element that we put in config, at least in the configuration model. We do have programmatic approaches as well, where you would define things like, oh, the audience URIs that you recognize in your application, which token handlers you would like to support, and any specific configuration that you want to give those, if you want to support SAML or if you want to support Windows, for example, X509 tokens, for example, you can do all of that. Any kind of certificate authentication that you use, you know, related to the signing infrastructure that we're wielding, that sort of thing. But all of this configuration information is basically compiled up into our runtime, and it sits behind the security processing, or security header processing infrastructure that WCF has. And we've integrated our code into WCF to get called in the right ways, and I've talked about the, you know, token authenticator infrastructure and the security authentication manager that we've wired up into WCF to leverage the components within IDFX to, again, generate this claims principle that we've talked about. So the rough guarantee is that basically once you make this configure service host call from the IDFX library, it's IDFX, you will get an iClaims principle in your app, and that's the way we work. One other aspect that I will mention is that we do have the equivalent of URL authorization in the WCF environment. There is an abstraction that's common to both platforms called a Claims Authorization Manager. Okay, and this class is roughly our first abstraction of the authorization infrastructure that we foresee people leveraging across both platforms. The interface is the same between the two. There's no difference. But roughly, it has one method on it, which is to, I think it's called check access.
Yep.
Okay. And this thing generates a Boolean, which indicates whether or not you want to grant access or not. And it takes kind of two pieces of information. One is a description of the resource that you are going to access. And in many cases, if this is, for example, a web method, for example, it would be, you know, potentially the name of the service, potentially the augmented with the method itself. And then additionally, the action that you want to take against that resource. And this is generally the way that we're modeling access control through this interface. And then the we haven't really defined all the infrastructure that comes under that yet. We're going to leave that for subsequent work. But I think there's examples inside the Geneva framework that kind of show ways that you could approach that using common policy languages and things like that. But the resource itself and the is actually can be defined as a simple string or as potentially a collection of claims, which has been a common request from some of the more advanced enterprise environments that we've had in some of the early pilots that we've been doing internally here at Microsoft and with other customers. Additionally, the action can be somewhat a detailed definition based on claims as well, but largely you could see this being a string for the resource and a string for the action, where maybe the action was drawn from, say, the SOAP action and the resource was the URI of the web method itself. Complementary to this authorization manager that we use for authorization is a simple extension piece of extensibility that we call the claims authentication manager. And that element is basically called after we've produced the principal, but before we've actually dispatched any requests to the WCF application. So, and what it does is it basically gives the application hosting environment, if you will, an opportunity to translate the identity or the security principal that's produced by the serialization infrastructure into something that might be more appropriate or more common to what the app is expected to see. So you could think of it as transforming the dialect, a translator, if you will, or the point where we would expect that to happen. So you could see it being affected by potentially domain-wide policy regarding, say, data dictionaries or claim types that might be supported within the domain but not necessarily accepted from outside of it. But based on those two pieces of extensibility, you can start to get a vision, I think, of where we're going and trying to simplify the model for how a lot of this security infrastructure works in these multiple domains, because both of these facilities are available in ASP.NET and WCF, and it's kind of a seamless flow between those two in terms of, you know, the claims model that we're trying to produce and the overt model that we're starting to encourage people to use. I think you can get a good sense of from at least those two classes.
Absolutely. So at the very beginning, you mentioned something about the more general model in which in federation the issuer is actually important, because we don't have a single our just home realm, but we needed to deal with more than one. So do we have anything in the ease infrastructure and also in the ASP.NET infrastructure that helps developers to manage which issuers are trusted?
Sure, yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I did forget to mention it. So when we when we started originally looking at authorization policy, our thinking was more along the lines that, you know, and it was somewhat naive, but, you know, we really hadn't thought about isolating the process of accepting requests from outside parties and federating on the edge of a domain versus inside of it. So you can think of or envision one drawback of that model is that every request that was coming from a federated partner would carry this variety of issuer information, right, that would be attached with it. So that would mean that every protected resource within the domain would have to know about issuance policy, right, in terms of what issuers were trusted. All of the policies that they wrote would have to be sensitive to that. And so one of the simplifications that we've started to evolve in our model is this idea that you translate claims and claim types and issuers on the edge of the security domain. And once you get inside it, it simplifies a lot of the policies that you have to write. The facility that we've introduced for that is a thing called the issuer name registry. So that basically we have an abstract class that we have some very simple implementations of that is called the issuer name registry. Okay, and this class, its responsibility is nothing more than to take the credentials that or signing information that was associated with the incoming tokens and to translate that down into a simple string, okay? And which would be the thing that when you write policy, whether it be, you know, transformation policy in like an authentication manager or authorization policy, your policy can be simplified to where it's just, instead of knowing about certificates and RSA tokens, things like that, you can simply know about the moniker that your domain comes up with. So you can envision an issuer name registry drawing from some common centralized policy store that describes the scheme that and taxonomy that would be used to translate or represent, you know, each of the partners that you allow to, yourself to federate with from an issuance standpoint. So that's where this this facility is plugged in. We think it's been a dramatic simplification in terms of the way that people are going to have to write policy, and we're pretty excited about that part of it. You can imagine if we had taken an alternative view of this, right, where let's say we just stuck the cert, you know, or had some reference to a certificate in the claims, you know, all the way down at the level of the claim. You know, the characterization of who an issuer is, you know, based on the certificate chain and all the validation rules that would have to go into that would be applied in all of these different places. And so we think by giving people the opportunity to do this on the edge of a security domain and to translate down to something simple that there's big gains to be seen from in terms of the policies that people have to write downstream of that.
Fantastic. That was really, really, really good. I'm sure that everybody will appreciate finally taking a look at how this is structured. And personally, I really like the fact that you guys really fought at the problem in general. And you are coming out with a solution that is very well engineered, very well tied with the rest of the platform and similar. So thanks for that. Before giving you back your office and your privacy, I would ask you a very last question, which would be, what's your favorite feature in this beta 2 of the Geneva framework? What's the thing that you said, finally it's out and people can use it?
I think Vittorio knows the answer to this question, so it may be somewhat leading. But the angle that I come at this from in terms of from a customer point of view is that the only reason that we're building all this identity infrastructure is to allow people to control access to the information that they have. That's really when you talk to customers at RSA, or I'm sure customers, the many people that will watch this, that, you know, the conversation that you have with them is, it doesn't really start with identity. It really starts with, you know, how do I control access to the things that I have in my business? And so from my point of view, we had a lot of stuff that we had to build first, specifically the authentication infrastructure that that's needed before we could really start tackling the problems that customers are facing today and really start to be directly helpful to them. And I know that a lot of people are going to build on top of this infrastructure, and we totally are encouraging that, you know, to build the authorization stuff themselves. But we're starting to take some first steps, even in this framework, I think, towards promoting the model that we think is going to be useful to customers in terms of doing that. The one example that I can characterize is that we have a set of classes, and I'll point to specifically the claims principal permission class. This class parallels the principal permission class that's in the framework today. That principal permission draws on roles and is usually something that you bake into your code. And if you think about the way that that works, that characterizes an approach that we are trying to encourage people to move away from. Because if you think that you have principal permission and you say, I want the person that's using this method declaratively, and you put in that in your code, you actually put the word administrator in there, for example, if that's what's required, you're baking policy into your application. The developer's making a decision about who it's appropriate for to use that. Our model is to draw upon the claims authorization manager. So we have a claims principal permission that accepts a resource and an action. Okay, and the intent is for those resource and actions to be when those are processed, to appeal to external infrastructure to make the decision about who has access to these elements, who can read or write or execute, against whatever resource that is listed in the app. And you can imagine it being scoped, the resource being scoped to the application deployment itself. But taking these two pieces of information in combination with the claims principal and the set of claims that are being carried by the principal at the time that this check access call is made, or this when the claims principal permission attribute is encountered in the execution stack, we basically can appeal to policy engines and external policy infrastructure to decide when and if and who is allowed to do whatever action is being requested. And the benefit of that is that we can basically write an app, document in some sort of manifest the resource and actions that are available or used, protected elements that are available within the app. All the calls you might think of to check access, for example. And then the deployer of the app, the enterprise that manages that application when it's deployed, can make those decisions through policy infrastructure and authoring as to who they want to be able to use those different features. And they can organize them hierarchically or however they seem to think of the world, based on organizations or whatever. In their way of doing things, which is, we think, the right way to do that. And if you think about that, it means that all that policy infrastructure is going to be centralized. And by being centralized, it's going to give customers an ability to analyze and query across that policy information and get a better view of security models and implications of deployments or staffing decisions that they're making in their environment. And we've seen a lot of that come up, especially from, it's been a big focus from people that we've talked to in the RSA context, for example, with regulatory requirements and auditing decisions that they need to make. They really need to take this step before they can really even approach starting to make those decisions. So that being able to characterize, I think, how that would be done on top of our platform is at least being able to start characterizing how that would happen, I think, today is one of the things that I'm most excited about. And I think our follow-up to that is going to be really exciting, because I think it's really going to directly hit on what customers are looking for.
It really is exciting. It's really the same that Harvey mentioned, the next step, everybody wants authorization. So, and you're right, I did know that it was this. But hey, I'm allowed a bit trickery.
He's baiting me.
All right. Thank you so much for this deep dive in the Geneva framework. I'm sure that a lot of people will really, really love it, because that really clarifies a lot of things. And we hope that we'll have a chance to speak with you again, maybe at the next release of the product.
Look forward to it.
Thank you.
All right.